I know for sure that we stole the election.
That's Louis Salas, a former Texas precinct judge who has come forward to say he helped Lyndon Johnson steal the U.S. Senate seat that served as his springboard to the White House. Salas's version of the so-called Box 13 scandal comes 29 years after Johnson faced three-term Texas Governor Coke Stevenson in a runoff for the Democratic primary, which in the Texas of 1948 was tantamount to winning the general election. Since the Associated Press broke the story, as told by Salas, a predictable storm of reaction has been blowing across Texas, ranging from outrage from Johnson backers to knowing smiles from Johnson's opponents. The new wave of publicity about the race prompted the LBJ Library in Austin to make public 5,000 pages of documents dealing with the election. Whatever the reaction, the story carries enormous historical implications and is the result of 3 years of research and interviewing by James Mangan, the AP's Dallas bureau chief.
We first got into this story almost 3 years ago when we picked up nothing more than a rumor, really, in San Antonio that a key figure in the Box 13 election controversy perhaps was willing to tell what had actually happened. This was just a rumor. There was no name given, just that there was someone who had played a role. So we went to our files and looked up our considerable file on the Box 13 election. And most of the people were dead, but there were a few names that were worth checking out, and including the election judge, Louis Salas.
Mangan recalls that Salas wasn't very talkative at first, but did provide the incentive for continued digging.
Right at the start, he said, "Johnson did not win the election. It was stolen for him, and I know exactly how it was done." That's all he told us, but from that point on, this is why really the story was pursued so diligently, if you will, or relentlessly, because this was a tremendously important historical revelation that only Salas could make, because the other people were already dead.
Mangan sets the stage for the controversy surrounding the Johnson-Stevenson race, South Texas in the 1940s.
During those years, South Texas was totally Democratic, as was the whole state of Texas. In this particular area below San Antonio was controlled totally by a political strongman named George Parr, lived in San Diego, Texas, that's in Duval County, and was known as the Duke of Duval. And Parr had pretty much mastery of the political situation in 7 or 8 South Texas counties, and could deliver, nobody ever questioned this, could deliver just about whatever vote he wanted to deliver.
But Mangan says the fact that George Parr could deliver a block of votes didn't mean he ruled with an iron hand.
It must be stated that Parr was by no means a dictator. He was a benevolent person. Without question, he did a great amount of good for these impoverished Mexican Americans who make up the bulk of the population in that part of the state. He was the patron, the man who took care of people. This is important. He was not a dictator issuing orders. He was the helper, the man who solved problems and assisted people. And in return, he got their loyalty, which paid off at the ballot box.
However, Parr associate Louis Salas recalls that Parr could get tough when he felt he had to, as with a saloon keeper who refused to join up with the machine branch of the Democratic Party. Salas says he had a talk with a man and told him,
"Either you join our party or we're going to close your place." "You can do that." "Of course we can. We had the liquor control in our side, and everything was in our side. And that night I told George Parr about Steve Canales. He says, "We want to close that place." "All right." He sent the liquor control over there, and he closed the place. Three days later, Steve come to my house and says, "Salas, let me join your party. I want my business back."
The first step for the 1948 U.S. Senate race in Texas was the Democratic primary election in July. In that race, Johnson didn't even come close to being the top vote-getter. Mangan explains.
It was a three-candidate primary, and Coke Stevenson, the man whom Johnson ended up by edging out, was the clear, was the dominant candidate. Johnson came in second, and this third man, his name was George Petty, siphoned off about 100,000 votes. If Petty had not been in the contest, Stevenson would have been the nominee of the party. But the third man threw it into a runoff primary because Stevenson did not have a full majority of the vote cast. That caused the second runoff, and that's the runoff that was decided by Box 13.
In the month-long period between primary and runoff, the two men showed markedly different styles.
Stevenson made then, after the first primary, there was a four-week period before the runoff, made what many observers in hindsight said was a mistake. He left Texas and went to Washington, ostensibly to look for a place to live when he was elected senator. Johnson, on the other hand, stayed in Texas and campaigned very strenuously during those 4 weeks in hopes of winning the runoff contest.
And Mangan notes that Johnson, who was known for making waves when he later reached the White House, was no different as a young candidate.
Johnson was a flamboyant, brash campaigner as opposed to the more staid Coke Stevenson, who restricted his campaigning to more or less routine speeches on the radio and campaign and rally appearances. Johnson used a helicopter, which was relatively unknown in those days, especially for politics, and he would buzz around the state and cause all kinds of uproars and attention when he landed in these small towns.
Johnson may have been unorthodox, but he was conventional enough to know that George B. Parr held the key to votes in South Texas.
As an astute politician, Lyndon knew who controlled the votes, as every politician did, in South Texas. He was by no means the only politician who, paid homage to George Parr. Every man who wanted to be elected in Texas, including national candidates who wanted the Texas vote, did the very same thing. The state was totally Democratic. To win an election, you had to be a Democrat, and to make sure of the South Texas vote, which was important, George Parr had to be on your side.
Louis Salas, the central figure in our story, was an associate of Parr's and an election judge for Box 13 in Alice. He says when Parr promised he would deliver votes, he wasn't kidding.
Every 2 years, it comes election, we had candidates against our party, but it didn't bother us because in every election day, I just told the other judges, just, you give our candidates of our parties 80% or 90% of the votes. And we did it.
In spite of Johnson's efforts, the August 20th runoff was a cliffhanger, but with Stevenson maintaining a narrow margin 3 days after the election. At that point, returns were still coming in, but things did not look bright for Lyndon Johnson. Louis Salas claims Johnson tried to remedy the situation with a visit to Parr's headquarters in San Diego, Texas, a small town about 10 miles from Alice. Salas says that he, Parr, and Johnson, and two other men were present at that meeting.
I remember Lyndon Johnson told George B., in order to win this election, we got to have about 200 votes. Lyndon Johnson told George B. Parr that. Now, Parr says to me, Louis, we got to have 200 votes.
Salas says he refused to add the votes himself, but during a conversation he and Parr conducted in Spanish, he agreed to certify enough phony votes to add about 200 names to the poll list. He claims George Parr then offered Johnson assurances that his vote total would grow.
George B. Parr told Lyndon Johnson, don't worry, you will have your 200 votes, because I have two men that will add the votes.
Salas is the only one of the five people he said attended the meeting who is still alive. Since he told his story, three former Johnson associates have come forward to say they don't think LBJ attended a post-election meeting with Parr, but they offered no documentation, and all three said they were sure Johnson didn't attend a meeting in Alice. That had never been at issue. Salas said Johnson met Parr in San Diego, Texas. But former Johnson aide Charles Herring is adamant in his contention that LBJ did not leave his hometown during the week following the election.
I didn't talk to him just once. I talked to him nearly every day, several times at different times during the day. And he was in Austin, Texas. He wasn't out of Austin that whole week.
At any rate, a revised vote total for Box 13 was sent to state officials 6 days after the polls closed. James Mangan describes what he was told by Salas about the addition of the extra names.
It appeared to be done almost casually, and again, one can only assume perhaps this had been done before and it was nothing new, because by adding the names in alphabetical order, as Salas says they did, it would have been an outright fraud if this had ever been revealed. There was no attempt, apparently, to even pretend that these names were those of people who had actually come in and voted. They just simply began listing names beginning with the letter A, the letter B, and C, and so forth. And Salas says the names, contrary to some popular stories about the Box 13 scandal, did not come from tombstones or from the cemetery. They came from the actual poll tax list showing eligible voters in Jimwell in Box 13, but these people had not voted that day for one reason or another.
For instance, one particular person, Mrs. Acero, they put her first on that list, and she didn't vote.
Where was she on election day?
She was in Alice, but she was our enemy. She wasn't the other party.
Texas Comptroller Bob Bullock now claims Salas's story doesn't hold water because Mrs. Acero's name doesn't appear on the records of poll taxes that had to be paid in 1948. But if Mrs. Acero didn't cast a legitimate vote, her name wouldn't be on the tax list. Bullock also disputes Salas's story by pointing to the fact that the 202 phony votes don't show up on official records. Since the list in question disappeared in 1948, that observation doesn't prove anything either. After Salas sent in his revised ballot totals, Johnson was declared the winner of the race by 87 votes. Needless to say, Coke Stevenson, who had counted on Parr's influence in past elections, was less than pleased at losing the election by such a narrow margin. Salas says there was no doubt that the Parr political machine carried the day.
Coke Stevenson, he was pretty good campaigner. He won that election, but the political machine against him, he was too strong.
But Salas said he could only sympathize with Stevenson to a certain degree.
I felt sorry for Stevenson, because the machinery was against him. But before, I remember in the past elections, when he was governor, we gave all the votes to Stevenson.
About 2 weeks after the election, Stevenson went to Alice with two associates to have a look at those election records. The three men got only a brief look at the poll list, but former FBI agent Kellis DeBrell said the 200 extra votes stuck out like a sore thumb, being in alphabetical order, all in the same handwriting, and all in the same color ink. An investigation was demanded, an injunction was issued against any declaration of Johnson as the winner, and just over a month after the election, hearings opened before a federal judge in Alice. However, 2 days later, an order from U.S. Supreme Court Justice Hugo Black brought things to a halt, possibly just short of finding fraud.
Salas himself said, absolutely, no doubt, a fraud could have been proven if the investigation had continued, probably for just another day or two. They would have been able to prove vote fraud. However, the telegram from Washington stopped things in the middle, and there was no chance thereafter to ever prove a fraud. The poll lists, the tally lists, vanished. No one knows to this day what happened to them, including Salas. The ballot, the actual ballot box, was open in the court just as the telegram came halting the investigation.
One of the lawyers of Stevenson asked me, do you recognize this box? Yes. And the box 13. Present 13. That's they opened the box. It was empty.
Just as the election probe got underway, another character in the cast of the Box 13 story arrived on the scene. Mangan explains.
The official investigation into fraud or possible fraud convened on a Monday, September 27th, 1948. On that very day, Harry Truman's campaign train had rolled into Texas from El Paso to San Antonio. It stayed overnight at San Antonio on the 26th, and then on Monday the 27th, the day the probe was just getting underway, it moved north from San Antonio to San Marcos, Austin, Temple, Dallas, and up into Oklahoma. Salas told me that while the train was in San Antonio, Lyndon Johnson, George Parr, and one or two other party officials from Jim Wells County boarded the train and had a conference with Harry Truman. Now, this is what Salas has told me. The records that I've been able to locate do not prove that such a meeting took place. We do know the train was there. We do know that Lyndon Johnson was on the train.
While there's no evidence of a presidential fix, there was no doubt that Truman was on LBJ's side.
In fact, at San Marcos on that Monday, Lyndon Johnson introduced Truman at his for his speech from the train in San Marcos. And then farther up the state, about perhaps 100 miles north at Temple, Texas, on that same afternoon, Monday, Truman endorsed Johnson as the next senator from Texas who deserved everybody's vote in the general election.
Salas remains convinced that Johnson and Parr cooked up a deal with Truman. He says he was told of the arrangement by another Parr associate in these words.
Don't worry about this investigation. We already had it straightened up. Says George B. and Lyndon Johnson, they want to talk to President Truman, which he was in San Antonio in his presidential campaign.
But John Broderick, who was editor of the Alice newspaper at the time, says he thinks Salas is just confused.
President Truman had a meeting with George Parr, which was highly publicized and covered by the AP, both press in San Antonio, Texas, but that was sometime later on. There was no connection between the two. And Mr. Salas's statement that Mr. Truman had assured George Parr and that Johnson had been present, these don't jibe at my recollection of the events.
Johnson, of course, did go on to win the general election and, as Mangan notes, possibly gave Louis Salas a unique place in history.
You could very truthfully say that what happened in this little precinct in this little town in South Texas actually changed the course of history, not just American history, but world history. Because as one person down there put it, really this way a person became president 15 years later who really perhaps shouldn't have, because he did not win the contest for the U.S. Senate.
After hearing the story of Box 13, I asked Mangan if he had ever come across a person or document that disputed Salas's version of the Johnson victory.
No, I have not. Salas's account really goes along with the speculation that has been prevalent ever since the election. In a sense, you might say it was an open secret that things had been manipulated, but it just never was proven. And this account that Salas has now given, I'm sure will be of tremendous interest all over the state, but I don't think it will be as a great come as a great shock or surprise to most knowledgeable observers, because they more or less suspected this is exactly what had happened.
As for his motives for deciding after all these years to tell his story, Salas said,
I was not going to make this thing public. But you see, I knew I did wrong. And now I had little time left living, so might as well get that off of my chest.
You feel better now that you've told your story?
I feel better now, yeah.
Salas, now white-haired and 76, is spending his retirement years on a small farm far from Alice. He's writing a book about the Box 13 scandal and about his role in South Texas politics during the 1940s. He says the whole experience has left him convinced that politics and corruption go hand in hand. Salas doesn't dwell on the implications of giving someone a fraudulent push toward the White House, saying he was just doing a job for his party. George Parr lost control of the votes in South Texas soon after 1948, and he was eventually indicted on federal income tax evasion charges. He shot himself to death in 1975 at the age of 74. Coke Stevenson remained convinced to the day he died that Johnson had stolen the election from him, believing that Box 13 in Alice was just the tip of the iceberg. After Salas told his story, Kellis DeBrell, the former Stevenson investigator who got a look at the Box 13 poll list, said Salas had, quote, finally confirmed what we knew all along. However, others came to Johnson's defense, among them former Alice newspaper editor John Broderick. He didn't dispute the claim that the 48 Senate race was rigged, just the claim that LBJ knew about it.
My recollection is, and these particular points, is not in keeping with him. If he says that he changed the vote, I have no reason to doubt him. I think he's probably telling the truth. He says he is. He says he did. I know the vote was changed. How it was changed, I don't know. Why it was changed, I can only guess. But to say that Lyndon Johnson was there, that is not so. As the editor of a paper, if Lyndon Johnson was in town at all, I would have known him and I would have had a story from him.
And Broderick says he just can't imagine Lyndon Johnson asking anyone to phony up 200 votes for him.
I hesitate to even think that Lyndon Johnson would ask a man to, you know, do that. This is not his character. He wasn't that kind of a person. He would probably ask everybody to recheck everything. We need every vote we can get.
Some other veteran Texas political observers have not been so charitable. Since Salas's allegations have stirred up so much reaction and comment, the LBJ Library in Austin decided to make public 5,000 pages of documents it has on the 48 Senate race. The 16 reporters who poured through the mound of papers found no surprises, but the material confirmed that there had been vote-changing and confusion before Johnson was finally declared the winner. The search also uncovered an unsigned, undated memo that appeared to be a statement written for Johnson, denying any knowledge of vote fraud in South Texas. But with key documents missing and most of the principal characters now dead, the controversy over the election that earned Johnson the nickname of Landslide Lyndon seems destined to continue. This is Joe Ewalt in Washington.